This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Nabil Biagio, and here's what's coming up.
Ruto takes the reign of power from former boss Uhuru Kenyatta, for whom he served as deputy president for the past 10 years. The incoming president likened his win to that of the country gaining independence from colonizers.
That's Mohamed Yusuf in Nairobi on the inauguration of Kenya's President William Ruto. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Kenya is swearing its new president, William Ruto, on Tuesday following a tightly contested election. Numerous African leaders attended the ceremony of Ruto, but his chief election rival, Raila Odinga, stayed away. As Kenya's fifth president, Ruto faces a struggling economy, massive debt, and a record drought that has devastated northern parts of the country. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Mr. President, please repeat after me.
In an elaborate ceremony, William Ruto took the oath of office to be Kenya's fifth president at Moi International Sports Center in Nairobi. Tens of thousands of Kenyans, a host of African leaders, representatives from foreign governments and ambassadors witnessed the inauguration. Ruto takes the reign of power from former boss Uhuru Kenyatta, for whom he served as deputy president for the past 10 years. The incoming president likened his win to that of the country gaining independence from colonizers.
Our special gratitude also goes to millions of Kenyans in the Hustler movement for tirelessly mobilizing for the campaign and executing a historic revolutionary feat, perhaps as great as the daring exploits of our legendary freedom fighters.
After years of neglect, the incoming government campaigned on what it called a hustler platform to empower the poor. Ruto said in his speech that he will work with Kenyans irrespective of whom they voted for. Ruto said as one of his first initiatives, he will lower the cost of food and announce the reduction of fertilizers from $54 to about $30 per bag. Samuel Nyandemo teaches economics at the University of Nairobi. He says the nation's economic state will make it difficult for the new government to deliver on its promises to the citizens.
It's inheriting an economy which is highly affected by foreign debts, implying that it will be very difficult for him to navigate in terms of trying to sort out the promises he gave in the first 100 days. So he's coming into this economic mess. They did two of them. And the coming out of that economic mess will require a miracle.
By they, Nyandemo means Ruto and his predecessor Kenyatta. Critics of the Kenyatta government accused it of overborrowing and corruption. As deputy president, Ruto fell out with Kenyatta, who supported his rival in last month's election, Raila Odinga. Odinga lost with 6.9 million votes to Ruto's 7.1 million. In an election marked by low turnout, a split election commission, and allegations of fraud by Odinga. In the past few weeks, some members of parliament allied to the Odinga coalition party have crossed into the government, a move that has many worried that the country might not have a strong opposition to check on Ruto's administration. Political commentator Harman Munyora says the country will be headed for trouble if the opposition aligns too closely with the new president.
What might be the only danger that people are seeing, given his current approach of poaching people and so on and so forth? We can quickly turn Kenya into a one-party state, not by law, but by practice, because he's out to get all these people on his side. And Raila is the only opposition voice. So if Raila now chooses to keep quiet, he has had enough. Then we shall be going back to one-party democracy.
Odinga, who challenged his laws unsuccessfully at Kenya's Supreme Court, did not attend Tuesday's swearing-in ceremony. In a previous statement, he said he will continue to work to transform the country into a prosperous democracy where each Kenyan fully belongs. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Kenyan capital, Nairobi, is in celebratory mode this evening after President William Ruto took the oath of office to officially become Kenya's fifth president early in the afternoon. Reporter Chama Ruben in Nairobi says, despite minor problems, the swearing-in ceremony was smooth and well-attended, and Kenyans in the capital are joyous as they put behind the 2020 election drama and go back to their lives.
The mood right now is that of jubilation, lots of excited Kenyans, crowds, you know, doting around the stadium where that function has just ended. And others are also lining up along the streets to greet the newly inaugurated president as he heads to State House, where there is going to be a special function, a state function, a kind of a luncheon to host some of his visiting guests, and also see off President, the former immediate former President Kenyatta, who will be handing over the state office to him.
You talk about jubilation in the streets and Uhuru Kenyatta welcoming Ruto into the State House. We noticed that Raila Odinga was absent at the inauguration. Raila, the challenger of William Ruto. What is going on with that, and what are his supporters saying or doing?
Odinga, who was defeated in the election, as you recall, he has actually contested the result of the election. He did not attend today's ceremony because he's out of the country. But at the same time, he's alleged that the result was rigged. But the country's Supreme Court has ruled that the election was free and fair. So that actually gave way for today's inauguration. That's why a lot of people sort of feel like the country has now moved on. There was a long wait as the petition went through the courts, and Kenyans, many Kenyans were waiting for this day so that they can carry on with their lives. And I think that's why today's ceremony was sort of a celebration. Many of the speakers who spoke today, they said this is a historic moment, and they said it is probably the time that the country should get back in motion so that the country can move on.
And speaking of crowds, there were some problems with the preparations. I understand there was a crash. Several people got injured as they were trying to get in to the stadium where the inauguration was taking place. Were there any other problems leading up to the ceremony?
The ceremony, actually, because this ceremony attracted such a huge crowd, people started streaming in very early in the morning. And by around 5 a.m. local time, the stadium, which holds up to 60,000 people, was full to capacity. So I guess the security, the police were sort of overwhelmed to control some of the crowd. We saw some people trying to climb the walls, and that's when they were falling off, and we saw some cases of people are injured. But other than that, the rest of the inauguration ceremony went very well. We had many, many dignitaries, I think more than nearly 20 heads of state of government from around Africa, as well as diplomats from around the world. So it was quite a well-attended ceremony. And also, as soon as the president took his oath of office, he also did a lap around the stadium to receive greetings from the excited crowd just before he exited the stadium to head to State House this afternoon.
That was reporter Chama Ruben. He spoke with me from Nairobi after the inauguration of President William Ruto earlier in the day. The Food and Agriculture Organization warns some 6.7 million people in Somalia are likely to suffer from acute hunger this year, including more than 300,000 projected to face famine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The FAO reports those at risk of famine are rural residents in the Baidoa and Borakaba districts, as well as displaced people in the Baidoa town of Bay region in southern Somalia. FAO representative in Somalia, Etienne Peter Schmidt, says malnutrition and mortality levels in that region already are at alarming levels.
The repeated warnings have been clear. Acne or a famine will occur within the next few weeks. The drought situation is spreading at an alarming rate. More districts and regions are facing emergency levels of food insecurity as the cumulative effects of multiple failed rain seasons take their toll.
Peter Schmidt is speaking from the Kabala district in Puntland state in northeast Somalia. He says he and colleagues are there to assess the impact of the drought on pastoral communities. He says the historic drought, high food prices, and conflict have pushed food insecurity to catastrophic levels.
The situation is fluid, but is also fast changing. However, trends dramatically resemble those seen in the famine that occurred in 2011. The scale and the magnitude of the drought emergency continues to worsen.
The emergency is having a particularly devastating effect on children. UNICEF spokesman James Elder notes at the time of the 2011 famine, 340,000 children under age 5 required treatment for severe acute malnutrition. Today, he says, that number has gone up to 513,000 children who are at risk of death.
Children are already dying. Our partners report that some stabilization centers are in fact full and critically ill children are having to receive treatment on the floor. We know, of course, that this is not just about nutrition, that severely malnourished children are in fact up to 11 times more likely to die of things like diarrhea and measles than well-nourished boys and girls.
He notes both diseases are spiking in the region. Elder describes the possibility that more than 500,000 children are facing preventable death as a pending nightmare not seen in this century. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United Nations World Food Programme says it is planning food relief for 700,000 people in Zimbabwe. The Zimbabwe government says it is working with aid agencies to help feed nearly 4 million people after the maize harvest dropped to 1.56 million tons, about half the amount from last year. Economists blame the food shortages on a poor weather, rising food prices, and the war in Ukraine, a major exporter of grain. The wire service notes Zimbabwe's inflation rate stands at more than 280%. The WFP says the number of Zimbabweans facing food shortages has increased from nearly 3 million to almost 4 million. The agency says it has allocated $40 million in food aid from October, when poor households could run out of food stocks, until the new harvest in March. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. A hospital official in Ethiopia's Tigray region says an airstrike Tuesday in the capital, Mekele, hit a university campus and a TV station, wounding at least one person. News agency Reuters reports the regional government-run Dimitsi Wayane TV station and the business campus of Mekele University were hit by the strike. A government spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The strike comes 2 days after Tigray officials appeared to offer an olive branch to Ethiopian federal government in stating they would agree to peace negotiations mediated by the African Union. The African Union and many world leaders welcomed Sunday announcement by the regional government of Tigray that it is willing to participate in AU-led peace negotiations. Senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Cameron Hudson, says the announcement may have been triggered by a shift in the balance of power on the battlefield, as well as the dire humanitarian situation in the Tigray region.
There's a fighting going on both sides, which we don't have a lot of visibility into. And so I think that there is a portion of this that is driven by either battlefield gains or losses that we're having a hard time, I think, interpreting. But also, I mean, I think we have to remember the strain that the TPLF has been under for many months, even years now, with respect to the humanitarian blockade. And even though there was this tentative ceasefire, there was never a full resumption of humanitarian assistance into the region. And so the TPLF has maintained from the very beginning, and even since the resumption of hostilities, that its principal objective was not, independence or political autonomy or, anything else. It was the full humanitarian access, and it was the resumption of services inside the region. And so presumably it believes that that engaging once again in peace talks is the best way to achieve that that objective right now.
And the TPLF had objected to the AU mediation before. They favored mediation led by Nairobi. And what has changed now? They're ready to let the AU lead the process.
Well, we don't know what's changed on the battlefield so much, but there is a presumption that there have been some battlefield changes. But I think you've seen, certainly the United States envoy has been on the ground for the past week or more. You haven't seen from him, a lot of public statements, but there's a real sense that the United States and others, the EU, are putting a lot of pressure on both sides behind the scenes, and I think promising to the TPLF, at least, to play a more active role in support of AU mediation. So I think part of the problem that the TPLF saw was that the AU mediation led by President Obasanjo was essentially doing its own thing. It was untethered from other international actors. And I think what we're seeing here is a commitment by the U.S. and others to play a more active and ongoing role in the mediation, part of whether we call it a formal mediation team or kind of an informal support system. I think the TPLF now has greater confidence that Obasanjo will not be acting as a lone actor, as he has been for many months now, but that he will be acting in concert with other powers, frankly, who the TPLF have more confidence in as mediators.
And how do you expect the negotiations to go? And will they finally possibly put an end to this brutal and prolonged war?
Well, there, I think it's premature to say. We can't take a very long-term perspective on this. And certainly, I think the TPLF is not taking a long-term perspective. The fact that they're willing to talk right now suggests that is their short-term need for humanitarian access and services to be restored. That's really driving and motivating it right now. If we can get to a point where there is full humanitarian access, where there is a restoration of banking services, electricity, communications, all of the things that have been shut down, then I think we can begin to talk about, okay, what are the next steps? But until those immediate, really survival needs are met, then it's very difficult to talk about an end to the war or a political settlement, those kinds of things. I think there's a lot more that has to be achieved before that conversation can happen.
That was Cameron Hudson at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Uganda has made its first war reparations payment to the Democratic Republic of Congo for losses its troops caused during wars and occupations in the 1990s. Uganda paid Kinshasa $65 million, the first of five annual payments ordered in February by the International Court of Justice. Uganda's payment came as a surprise after years of proceedings and talks with the DRC, as Halima Uthmani reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Uganda's payment to the Democratic Republic of Congo follows a ruling by the International Court of Justice early this year. The court ordered Uganda to pay $325 million to the DRC as reparations for an invasion that lasted from 1998 to 2003. Under the order, Uganda is to pay $65 million in September of each year from 2022 through 2026. Uganda's Minister of Finance spokesperson, Apollo Muginda, tells VOA that the first payment is a gesture by Uganda that it is willing to pay the amount set by the court.
Uganda has paid the first installment as per the requirement. We paid $65 million, and you can see the goodwill. If something happens along the way because your brothers, we are all members of this African community, well, it can be negotiated further.
The ruling by ICJ Judge John Donohue came 7 years after Uganda failed to pay or negotiate a request from the DRC to pay $11 billion in compensation for the war. Great Lakes expert Dismas Nkunda says Uganda's willingness to make the payment was shocking.
I'm shocked that we can pay. I'm shocked that we can pay on time. I'm shocked that Uganda can listen to a decision by an international court. First of all, the matter before the International Court of Justice, they didn't take it seriously in the beginning, and they thought that it's a matter they could do a diplomatic maneuver over it and discuss with the DR Congo, and it would end.
The $325 million payment includes $225 million for damage to persons, $40 million for damage to property, and $60 million for damage related to natural resources. The Reuters news agency reports DRC government spokesperson Patrick Miaya confirmed that the first of five installments was received. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Or for world news, go to voanews.com. On behalf of engineer Rob McLean and producer Nadia Taha, thank you for tuning in and for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05.